Hi, I'm Arturo Farrell, and this is Piano Jazz. I'm sitting in this week for Marion McPartland, and my guest is the extraordinary pianist named Vijay Iyer. This young Renaissance man is largely a self-taught pianist who holds multiple degrees in mathematics and physics. It can easily be said he's one of the most daring original artists of the under 40 crowd. Vijay, welcome to Piano Jazz.
Thank you, Arturo. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's my pleasure to have you, man. It's my pleasure to be able to talk to you. And I have quite a few questions to ask you. I always find that term largely self-taught interesting. Did you actually teach yourself music? I mean, did you actually sit down and figure out at a piano what you wanted to do?
Well, you know, I started with violin, and I actually had violin lessons for 15 years. I started when I was 3 on the Suzuki method, and then I got into, you know, I played the Western classical repertoire on violin. And somewhere along that time, when I was 5 or 6, I started playing piano by ear. And so I never had piano lessons, but I had lots of music lessons, a lot of musical exposure in a lot of different contexts. I mean, I grew up playing in orchestras, and then I was in a rock band in high school, and then I joined our school jazz ensemble, and, you know, so I learned in formal and informal ways. I mean, I when I first got interested in jazz, I started checking out a lot of records from the local library and tried to learn a bit about the theory and the history, and it just sort of grew little by little, and, you know, I didn't go to music conservatory. I had a decidedly different path from that, which we could talk about or not.
Please. Because there's such, well, the interesting thing today, of course, is that jazz is an educational thing now. I mean, there's jazz education all over the you know, the United States anyway. And but you took a different path. Can you elaborate?
Well, you know, my father was scientifically trained, and they very much valued education, like a lot of immigrant families do. And so I was sort of groomed for the sciences, and that's
right.
Even though I was, they drove me around to music lessons, you know.
Well, that was probably considered part of a good education, a good background for any young educated person to have music as part of their lives. Well, my father, Chico Farrell, was supposed to be a lawyer, and he would sneak out of the house at, you know, every night to play in Havana nightclubs and then go to law school all day. So I think that I can relate that shock of of discovering all of a sudden, oh my God, I'm a musician.
It's like, how did I get here?
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it's I wouldn't trade any of it.
I know this is all great, but people are dying to hear you play, as I am, and we'd love to have you perform for us. Would you do that for us, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Okay.
I'd like to play the standard I'm All Smiles. I was inspired by this piece when I first heard it played by Jerry Allen, the great pianist. You know, I'm young enough to have been influenced by her pretty deeply, especially the way she synthesized a lot of the tradition of people like Monk and Herbie Nichols and Andrew Hill and Duke Ellington and Bud Powell and that whole school of playing, and made something very personal with it. So I remember hearing her play this about 20 years ago with Charlie Hayden and Paul Motion, and also a little bit later with Betty Carter, which totally knocked me out. So this is, I guess it's fair to say it's an homage to her.
Lovely.
I'm All Smiles.
Let's talk a little bit about your compositions as a composer. What is your process? How do you work? Are you like a birthing painful composer, or are you one of these people that jots? T- tell us about yourself as a composer.
Well, you know, for those of us who, A, compose for improvisers, and B, are improvisers ourselves and band leaders, like yourself, our process is a bit different because we're constantly test-driving ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as improvisers, we're always taking chances and risks and trying things just to see what happens, you know. And so I find that that informs the composition process so much, and it enriches it. And, you know, when you have something down on paper, it's not finished.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not at all for people like, for the music that we do, you know.
Right.
It's about, for me, when I compose, I'm thinking, okay, what can I put down on paper to set that process in motion? You know, because ultimately it's not really about me as a composer. It's about what that provokes in everybody else or in myself
mm-hmm.
as a player. You know, writing for a small group that where, you know, we get to try things on the bandstand and adjust and kind of refine. And that sort of is, to me, the most stimulating part of the process. And I find that it's not really... It never really ends, actually.
Well, now, it's a little different, for instance, than in the case of your first orchestral work, Interventions, that was commissioned by the American Composers Orchestra.
Yeah.
That involved dealing with a lot of people who do not work in the realm that we do.
Right.
And I wonder if you can tell us what that was like.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I've never spent so much time on such a small amount of music.
Lots
I mean,
of paper.
Like 6 months of my life in 15 minutes, literally. So I was interested in that sound of people making decisions in real time. What does that sound like?
Mm-hmm.
That's what improvisation is.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. I very much would like to play a piece with you, perhaps one of your compositions. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. It's called Abundance. And even though the title is Abundance, there's a little bit of sadness in the song. It's actually using this interesting raga, or at least the pitches from a raga that's a very rare one called Rasika Priya. And it has all these interesting large intervals in it. So it gives the scale this irregular shape. And so I drew these harmonies out of the scale. And so you get these interesting connections that you wouldn't necessarily have in normal tonal music. So let's see what we can do with it. I know you're going to...
Some folks might not know that you have a bachelor's in math and physics, a master's in physics, and an interdisciplinary PhD in technology and arts. How has your work in science and math and physics influenced your writing and your playing?
Well, you know, I was playing music before I was doing science, and the studies that I've heard about seem to suggest that actually music prepares you for a lot of other kinds of thinking, and particularly, you know, handling abstract quantities and that kind of symbolic reasoning that we do when we play music. You know, even my child knows that a certain note is higher than another note, and that means that there's something that's increasing in intensity or in magnitude as you go up the scale.
Mm-hmm.
So these kinds of quantities that you absorb as a child when you're learning music, they're abstract in a way, you know. So being able to move from that kind of thinking to mathematics and physics and stuff. I think that's sort of because I started playing violin when I was three, like I said, that seemed to help push things along for me. But, you know, I also do think a lot about the science of music and, for example, the physics of sound. I think a lot about harmony in terms of timbre and resonance and, the physics of acoustics. And then I also think a lot about structuring music using kind of elaborate sort of symmetric rhythmic structures and things
yeah,
like
that's,
that.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
But, you know, the thing is that that's not necessarily only grounded in my scientific background. It's also something that is part of Indian music. But, you know, for me, the point is to find the soul of it. And
I was going to go there. I was going to ask you because I think that a lot of whatever a person believes in terms of faith, there's a lot of design and symmetry in nature. In fact, there's a study about this where there's a symmetrical design to cellular structure and all kinds of coordinating kind of structures in nature that do the same thing.
Yeah, it's true.
And I was wondering if that was a source of inspiration also on a somewhat, I guess the word, spiritual level for your writing, that these designs are so prevalent in nature.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think, again, like when you look at the way that those kinds of mathematical techniques are used in Indian music, it's not just to flex some mathematical muscle.
Right.
It's because it's really revealing an order that the universe already has.
I think Olivier Messiaen was very influenced
yeah,
by this.
Yeah, it's true, he was.
I think I read that in his treatise on theory.
Yeah.
That he was very, very influenced by.
Yeah. It's interesting because then you kind of put yourself in dialogue with something that is not you, is not yourself, you know. And working through those kinds of systematic challenges, I mean, the example we all know is Coltrane playing Giant Steps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is an artificial piece of music, you know. If you look at the way the harmonies are structured, it's a symmetric arrangement across the octave.
Right.
And it's something that's really counterintuitive if you've, you know, if you're used to tonal music because of the way it jumps through key centers. And he pushed himself through that kind of rigorous procedure in order to achieve something. And, you know, the rest is history, you could say.
Of course.
And you could also say that it's because he did that that we then had a love supreme.
Well, really, a lot of what we do is mirror that.
Exactly.
The desire to, that we reflect that some sort of divine design. I mean, that sounds heavy, but but I think that that's what we try to do when we play music. We try to reach out past ourselves.
Right, exactly.
You know? I'm very excited that we're going to play something together. It's something of mine that I'd like to tell you a little bit about it if I can. It's a piece called Blue State Blues. I won't say if I was getting the blues or giving the blues, but I did write it 8 years ago and recently had the blues eradicated to some degree. And
though they do persist.
Well, they have a tendency to do that, the blues.
Yes.
This is Blue State Blues.
Hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast. Tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.npr.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.